Welcome to the Lost Together podcast with Matt Wardlaw.
Welcome to another edition of the podcast, episode 16, if you're keeping track there at home. But of course, you already know that because you clicked play or hit the download button to grab this latest episode of the podcast. So thanks for doing that. This week, I'm happy to share a conversation that I had with Kiefer Sutherland, who you guys know so well as the actor behind the massive 24 franchise, just to name one huge cornerstone of his career. But he's also a longtime music guy who, as you'll hear, he spent a lot of time and a lot of years playing guitar, writing songs, and even though that's not what we know him for, it was a personal passion for Sutherland and one that he's now bringing to the front with his debut album, Down in a Hole. Singer-songwriter Jute Cole, also an artist manager for a number of years now, is somebody who you probably know from songs like Baby It's Tonight and Start the Car, which got extensive radio airplay in the late 80s and early 90s, and in recent years, he's been the guy behind the scenes who's been a big part of the success of the band Lifehouse, so much so that you would probably hear the guys in Lifehouse say that Cole is just as much a part of the band as they are. He's one of Sutherland's longtime friends and his former partner in Ironworks Music, and he played an important role in helping to put this new record together. We'll discuss Cole's involvement and also go through the other folks who were part of the process. Sutherland has been on tour for about a month now, and he's doing shows that run through the end of May, and he drops a big hint during the interview that he's going to be doing more shows beyond that initial two-month run of dates, and he's already making good on that promise with the recent announcement of a show that's going to bring him back to Toronto, where he spent some time growing up, for a show at the Toronto Jazz Festival on June 27th. He's playing at the legendary Horseshoe Tavern, so that's really cool. I spoke with Kiefer in late March, just before the tour got rolling, and unfortunately, I did not end up making it to the show here in Cleveland due to a travel snafu, but I have to tell you, I have friends who went to the Cleveland show, and I've heard reports from other markets. It's a really good time, and folks are really digging the shows and the tunes, so if it makes it to your city, go check out Kiefer and the band. You're going to have a real good time. The Down in a Hole album is going to be out sometime this summer. You can keep tabs on Kiefer and the Not Enough Whiskey tour by going to KieferSutherlandMusic.com, and he's also been posting a lot of updates on Facebook, facebook.com/KieferSutherland, so go and check all that out. Thanks for listening to the Lost Together podcast. Email us at losttogetherpod@gmail.com. Twitter and Facebook, Lost Together Pod is where you'll find us there, and our website is losttogetherpod.com. Now, here's my conversation with Kiefer Sutherland. I hope you enjoy it.
I mean, this is a pretty decent-sized tour, I think about 26 shows or so at this point, and I wondered...
For now, yeah.
Yeah, I wondered how much of a process is it for you to clear room on your schedule for a tour outing like this?
You just do it when you can. I mean, I've been playing kind of all around California for a couple months before, you know, from January on. Then I came out to Toronto to shoot a show for ABC called Designated Survivor.
Yeah.
And you just, you know, if you want to do it, you figure it out. And the truth is, we can handle up to 40 dates in this first run, but this is something we'll be doing all year long.
Oh, that's really cool. It's got to be really cool for you. I mean, you're going to be presenting a show that's going to largely consist, I would guess, of, material from the record, which obviously... people haven't heard that at this point. I think that's got to be kind of exciting in a sense artistically to be able to present things in that way, because they don't go into it with the knowledge that it's, you know, here's what I'm going to hear tonight. They kind of come into the experience completely fresh.
You know, it's a double-edged sword. It's a lot to ask an audience to come in for an hour and a half and listen to music that they've never heard before. The nice thing for me is that certainly through the shows in California, we held those audiences.
Cool.
I've got an amazing band. I'm very proud of the songs. But the songs are really personal. The songs are really like a diary for me. And so there's, you know, moments throughout the show where I get to say, you know, I was about 24 when I wrote this song, and this is why, and this is what it was about. And so... just by having the songs be as personal as they are for me and being able to kind of explain where they came from and what I was going through in my life and trying to kind of explain that, I think probably a lot of people in the audience have gone through similar things. It allows for a kind of intimate connection between a band and an audience that I think is a really, really fun night and really fun for us and hopefully really fun for the audience as well.
So it sounds like some of this material goes back a little ways. What kind of made this the right time for you to, you know, to do a record?
It was funny. It didn't start out like that. I approached Jude Cole, who's been my best friend forever, and just had a couple songs that I wanted to do kind of demos with and get them to BMI and Sony and see if any other artists would like to record them. And we did two or three songs that way. And, you know, Jude's known me for a really long time, and he knew what the songs were about. And he said, you know, I think these are really... He really liked the songs, and he liked the way that I played them. And he said, you should hold on to these. These should be for you. And I, you know, I kind of laughed about that. And then he said, why don't we do it? Have you got any more? And so played him a couple other things I've been working on, and we worked on stuff together. And, you know, two songs became four songs became 10. And at some point, I had to kind of come to terms with the fact that I really liked the way the songs had come out, and I really liked the way Jude and I and Brian McLeod, who played drums on the album, how those songs were recorded.
Oh, cool.
And
I love
and
Brian's work.
Brian's awesome. Brian's stunning. And I just had to, I had to come to that for myself that, no, this is something I can stand by. This is something, I would be proud of. And I mean, let's face it, an actor releasing music is not a new thing, and it rarely ever goes over well.
Right.
and I'm completely aware of that. And so I had to take all of those things into consideration. And I still felt really strongly that not only did I want to put the record out, but really my favorite part is playing the shows. Mm-hmm. And to be able to play, 12, 13 songs of mine. And trust me, there's moments in the show where I'll explain, this one artist had a real influence on me and this is why, and I'll play a song from that artist. So there will be songs that people will be familiar with, a couple of those through the set. But it's I'm into storytelling. It's what I love about acting, and it's what I love about playing music live. And it's what I loved about writing this album. So for me, it's really a kind of an extension of that, and we'll see what happens.
Did the initial shows go how you thought they would?
There's yes and no. The audiences. I was very surprised in the first couple shows, having never played these songs for anybody ever. There was nothing on the internet, there was nothing at all. And the first show was like 350 people. It wasn't small. It was a bar down in Long Beach. And I was amazed that, I expected maybe a quarter of them to kind of drift off or go out to the smoking patio or do something. But they didn't. They stayed with us for the whole show. So I was grateful for that. Obviously, there's stuff between me and the band that we're always striving to get better. The graciousness of the audience so far, we played about 20 shows in California. I was just kind of really moved by that, to be honest with you.
And is the band that you're taking out on the road, is it the guys you made the record with, or how'd that come together?
No, I made the record with Brian McLeod and Jude Cole and myself. That was it.
That's not a bad mix.
Yeah, and Florian Amon mixed it, and then we had Jim Cox came in and played some piano. And then Jude had some fantastic background singers come in on a couple of tracks, and that really was it. And so Jude played bass on the record, electric guitars, I played acoustic, and Brian played drums, and we kind of built the record like that.
So who's going to be with you on the road?
Michael Gurley and Austin Vallejo
are playing
guitar with me. And Joseph De La O is playing bass. And Jess from a band that I had on Ironworks, she played drums at the Boy on Poison. And Jess is playing drums with us now, too, and she's awesome.
Very cool. I'm assuming that's Michael Gurley, same one from Dada?
From Dada, yeah.
Cool.
And he actually co-wrote a lot of the songs for Billy Boy on Poison. So I've known Michael for a long time through Ironworks, obviously Jess through Ironworks. And then Austin Vallejo, who's a phenomenal guitar player. He was actually from Moline, Illinois, which is where Jude's from. He reached out to Jude. They started a kind of a solo project. He's much younger. He's in his kind of late 20s. And ended up hearing what we were doing and decided to come help out with that. So it's I can't speak enough about the band.
Yeah.
Really great, great players and a lot of fun on stage and a lot of fun off stage too.
Well, musically, I mean, I've heard what I guess is the first single, Not Enough Whiskey, and how indicative would you say that is with the tone of the rest of the material on the record?
It's an aspect. I mean, I think the record is probably categorized in the Americana kind of singer-songwriter category, but there's some rock stuff. Down in a Hole is a straight-up rock tune. Shirley Jean is an old-style, old-school country song. Can't Stare Away, which is the first track off the record, is kind of more of a rock tune. And then there's a lot of kind of Americana singer-songwriter songs kind of in the meld of that, too. One of the things that was really important to me when we went out to do this, and it was really important to me with Ironworks, I felt that the focus on singles was so predominant in the music-making process, certainly through the late 90s into the new millennium, that I wasn't hearing any more albums that I felt had real continuity from beginning to end.
Yeah.
And that was something that was really important to me. And even though it sounds quite diverse, are you going to be able to come to the show in Cleveland?
Oh, absolutely, man. I can't wait. I was stoked.
Oh, great, man. Well, I would love to talk to you about it after.
Yeah.
Because I think there really is a continuity in the music, even though it crosses certain genre borders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, so Not Enough Whiskey is an aspect of the record, and it's a kind of a slower tempo song. But it really expresses kind of the more of the country feel of the record. But songs like Going Home and Down in a Hole and All She Wrote, those are much more up-tempo and kind of driving songs, and they really play well in the show.
Oh, that's awesome. I guess I wanted to ask, like, you've talked about Jude. You know, what would you say that he brought to the table as a producer and a collaborator that's been helpful for you?
Everything and the kitchen sink. you know, Jude is amazing. You know, as a writer, I really predominantly focus on, verse, chorus. It's not that I'm opposed to bridges. Melodically, I don't think in those kinds of terms. So Jude would say, well, I don't like what you've done, you know, that bridge there, and can we change it to this? And all of a sudden, the song would have a kind of a cohesiveness that it didn't have before. I think Jude's got million-dollar ears, so even though the record is pretty sparse, the balance of it I just think is extraordinary. And so he really, what I've learned from him over the last year and a half during the process of making the record and putting up the show and everything else, Jude's had a very, very large hand in that, in all of it. And you know, I think, and I've felt this way for 30 years. I think he's one of the most talented musicians I know and that I've ever heard.
Yeah. And it's cool to see the two of you guys working together. I'm curious, like, what drew you to the Ironworks thing back in the day when you guys first partnered up for that?
I had moved into a warehouse, in kind of East Hollywood, East LA, like around Vermont and Santa Monica.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple really great bars that were playing music. Starlight was one of them. El Cid was another. Silver Lake Lounge was another. And they were all within walking distance. And there was was enough room in this warehouse to actually build a really great studio. And we were going out one night, I was showing them the place, and we went out and we saw this band play, and they were unbelievably good. And then we went and checked out another place, and they had an unbelievably good band there. And none of these guys were signed, and none of them were getting signed. The music industry was going through a massive transition. And unless you were doing pop or American Idol, good luck getting a record out. And I think it pissed both of us off. And so we built the studio, and that was really for Jude to work out of. And then we just ended up finding artists in the area and really liking what they were doing. We would make their record, and then ultimately we became a label. And then ultimately partnered with Universal Republic, and then all of those artists went there. But it was really mainly just frustrating for us to watch incredible talent being squandered because technology and the industry were not meeting up properly.
And from what I know, I mean, you know, obviously folks know you as an actor, as you kind of said at the head of this, but you're a music guy way back. I mean, where did you first start playing music and I guess writing songs?
I started playing when I was about 4 years old. I was playing violin. My mom made me play violin till I was 10, and that's how I got a guitar.
Nice.
And then I got a guitar when I was 10 and was in a band by the time I was 12, and we were writing stuff back then. I met Jude, and Jude was such an extraordinary guitar player that I kind of put my guitar under my bed for about 6 or 7 years because I was embarrassed to play around him. And then I missed it, and I just started playing a lot again. And then when I started doing 24, that was occupying so much time, and I had a guitar in the trailer, and obviously when you're shooting something, there's a lot of downtime waiting for the crew to set up the shot and everything else. So I was playing 4 or 5 hours a day for a decade, and I was writing a lot through that period. It would help me pass the time. And so that's why I had a backlog of songs a couple years ago when 24 finally finished. I just started playing Jude stuff I'd written during that period.
Yeah, I saw a picture that looked like you might have a pretty decent collection of guitars.
I've collected guitars for a long time, mainly because had a lot of friends that were really great musicians, and they'd be going out on their first tour, and they didn't have a really good guitar to play with. So I'd lend them one.
Nice.
And then they all did well, and so the guitar started coming back, and you'd have 3 Strats in a rack that were beautiful, and all of a sudden you go, oh, I have 2 more and I can finish that rack. And so the collecting became a kind of almost a disease for me. But for me, guitars, they're my vision of a work of art. And different guitars inspire you to play different styles and inspire you to play more. And the collection got a little out of hand, but I've managed to, I brought it way down to about, you know, which still sounds, I'm sure, to most people out of hand, but down to about 30 guitars. And out of that, there's at least 10 that I'm using regularly. And then a couple others I'll make a cup of tea and just look at for a while.
Yeah, I'm always impressed when I talk to folks, because if there are guys like you, and I mean, definitely, I think you're somewhat in control, because like I talked to one guy that has like, say, 100, 150 guitars or whatever, but it's impressive to me if those folks, you know, like yourself, you know, as you said, each one kind of brings a different sound and a different feel, but a lot of the folks I talk to, they can make a case for why they own, you know, most, if not all those guitars.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I got to a point now where I got it down to a kind of a reasonable number, where they're actually all in my house and they're hanging up. And if I see another guitar that I want to buy, I have to get rid of one. So it's slowed the process down considerably.
Well, you kind of alluded to this, but you know, kind of what brought you and Jude together as friends? How'd you meet him?
I met Jude through Camelia Cass, who is the mother of my daughters.
And, okay.
And he wrote a song for her that he played at our wedding. And I think I was about 20 years old, so I was pretty shell-shocked at the wedding. And I think as I was walking down the aisle on the way out, on my way to the bar, I looked at him and said, I really like that song. You're a really good guitar player. And he met me over at the bar later that day, and we just became friends immediately.
Oh, that's cool. Timeline-wise, it doesn't seem like this works, but I saw something on the internet that the two of you might have shared an apartment in Toronto in the 80s. Is there truth to that?
No, okay. No, there is no truth to that. I met Jude in Los Angeles, and I certainly crashed at his place there. Jude and I met in the 80s. I think it was about 86, 86.
Yeah, okay. Well, as a music fan, what would you say are kind of some of the big influences for how you've approached the songwriting process? You kind of mentioned, like, as far as the shows, that there's some folks that you'll talk about.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and certainly, you know, I'll tell you people that have influenced me, but and in no way, shape, or form am I comparing myself to those artists.
Yeah.
Those artists would be Bob Dylan, Tom Petty, Paul Simon, Neil Young, James Taylor, Johnny Cash, Waylon Jennings. Chris Christopherson is one of my favorite writers. Canadian artist Gordon Lightfoot has written some songs that I just absolutely love. So they're kind of all in that milieu. Bob Seger is one of my favorite writers. So it kind of all lives in the kind of rock. And if you listen to Bob Seger now, that's perceived as rock, you know, country rock, country almost.
Mm-hmm.
So it all kind of lives in that world.
Yeah, and those are all guys that kind of certainly knew, you know, how to assemble that album continuity that you talked about, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, absolutely. Every single one of them. I mean, when you listen to either Damn the Torpedoes or Bob Seger's Against the Wind or Main Street, I mean, it's just striking.
Oh, yeah.
And then you could say the same thing about, you know, Lynyrd Skynyrd, too.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was a deeply underrated songwriter, Van Zandt, and just I thought could put a lyric to a song like nobody's business.
Yeah, I guess the reason I asked that question was I wondered, like, you know, like as a songwriter, like if there are certain things that you see that kind of rubbed off as far as the way some of those people like put songs together. So I didn't know if you see any of that in your songwriting.
I would say there's aspects, you know. Paul Simon, I think, is one of the most extraordinary songwriters of all, but I've always felt that his lyrics were so melodic, and the metaphors that he would use to express a thought would be something that I would try and achieve. Tom Petty, I don't think, ever wrote a bad lyric. You know, and he would come up with a great hook line like, "Don't do me like that," or, you know, the chorus to Refugees. So that would be something I would try and aspire to. And then Bob Seger is another one. Bob Seger and Johnny Cash both told stories. And that is something that is really important to me as a songwriter, that you understand what the conflict is of the song and that there's some kind of resolve at the end of it.
Well, you had mentioned the Designated Survivor TV show, and I wanted to ask about that. It seems cool, and I wondered kind of where things are at with that presently.
We're shooting it right now. I had such a great run on 24 that it's kind of difficult, I think, for people to hear how excited I am to do this show.
Yeah.
But I really am. I mean, between the tour and being able to do this show, kind of looking forward to having the best year of my life. I'm really grateful for it. But we're just about finished the first episode, and I'm as proud of this as I have been at anything I've ever done.
Well, I mean, I think it's kind of fun when you have had something like a 24 that you're not, like, say, jaded at this point and, you know, can't feel like that.
No, it's you know, for me, it wasn't something I was planning on doing, but the script was just so damn good. There wasn't, you know, it would have killed me to just watch the show and know I could have had an opportunity to be a part of it. So, you know, it was something that I just really wanted to do and was really excited. We've got an extraordinary cast, and it comes out on ABC in the fall. And can't wait for you to check that out, too.
Well, is there any unfinished business in your, you know, side of things as far as it goes with 24?
Well, no, I'm an executive producer on the new 24, which is, it's a great script. I think the writers are so relieved that they don't have to write another bad day for Jack Bauer, because how many bad days can one guy have? So I talk to Howard Gordon all the time about where this, you know, they're about to start shooting in a week or so. And I'll be back in LA by that time. They've got a great cast. I think Jimmy Smith just got on board, and so we're thrilled about that. And, you know, Jack Bauer's out there. I've learned to never say never, so we'll see what happens.
You're a smart man. That's the mark of a veteran. So, well, Designated Survivor, when, you might have said this, I'm sorry, but when is that going to, when's that scheduled to, like, I guess, drop?
In the fall, sometime in September, I would think, or September, October, somewhere in there. I mean, that certainly has nothing to do with me. That's a decision ABC makes.
And yeah.
As soon as we know, it'll go up online.
As far as the record goes, I know I've heard like it's coming out this summer. Do you know a specific date yet, or is that not?
I'm hoping for June. So,
cool.
I'm hoping for June, and hopefully we'll be able to play a bunch of dates in June as well. Right now we're doing April and May, but I'm hoping for June and that we'll be able to be out for that month as well. And then when I start the show, probably be restricted to about 5 shows a month.
Okay. Yeah. Beyond that, I guess, what else is on tap, that you would want folks to know about?
Nothing. This is it, man. And for the people in Cleveland and the people that will come out to the show, I look forward to having a great night and a lot of fun, and thanks for giving us a shot.
For sure. And I mean, based on hearing this first tune, I'm looking forward to hearing, you know, more songs, and I'll take you up and we'll discuss, you know, kind of more stuff after the show when you're here in Cleveland. So
you got it, man. I'll buy you a beer.
All right, man. Well, hey, thank you so much.
Awesome.
For the time.
Matt, thank you very much, and we'll see you in a few weeks.
There you have it. That's my conversation with Kiefer Sutherland. Thanks so much to Kiefer for taking some time to talk music with us. Thanks again to you guys for listening to the Lost Together podcast. I'll be back next week with another episode. So until then, keep rocking. Always enjoy the music. That's what it's there for.